wanted to clarify something from last time, which I was listening to the recording, and based on a question I got right after the shiur was a bit unclear, which is the issue of proper dress for Torah scholars, which is that I just switched from one topic to the other, but they're really two separate dinim. That the issur of a Talmud going in with his Rebbe, at least his Rebbe Muvhak, his main Torah teacher, into the merchatz, into the bathhouse, that's a din on the Talmud.
Right.
That the student is not allowed to go in with the Rebbe to the bathhouse. But the idea we're talking about, the Rosh Hashiva jogging in his neighborhood in t-shirt and shorts, that's not a din on the relationship between the Rebbe and the Talmud. That's just a din in how a Torah scholar presents himself. That's in Hilchos Deos of the Rambam, not in Hilchos Talmud Torah in terms of the relationship of a Rebbe and a student. Hilchos Deos talks about how a person should conduct himself. So the idea is that one is a din on the student, one is a din on the Torah scholar. They, even if he's not the biggest Torah scholar in the world, if he's in a position of Torah authority, you're supposed to respect it as a Rosh Hashiva or a rabbi in the community. So he's required to present himself, or if she's a Yuetzet Halakha, so she's required to present herself. So this person is required to present him or herself. We're talking mostly about a man, so we'll go with him. So the rabbi has to present himself in proper manners. That wasn't a din on the student seeing. In other words, the student's not allowed to go on the street while the rabbi is jogging in shorts, because the rabbi is not allowed to jog in shorts in the first place. And the rabbi is allowed to go to the bathhouse if there doesn't expect any students around. But the rabbi, the student's not allowed to come in when with the rabbi at the same time. So it's
One of the Muslim yeshivas that tried to break down people's egos by making them go around in ragged, dirty clothes.
Oh, yeah,
like that.
Right.
Dirty manish?
Like
yeah, Navardak, yes. Right. I don't know if they went. They went and beat up dirty clothes?
Right. And other things where they would,
as opposed to Slabodka, where they all dress properly and nice, because one focus on the godless Hadam and one the shiftless Hadam, one how great a person could be, one how lowly a person could be. Right, again, it's not necessarily proper for, there's a balance. I don't know exactly what the mahalach was in these two yeshivas, but it's also not proper for, it's certainly not proper for a rabbi to go around in ragged, dirty clothes. It's also not necessarily proper for the rabbi to, go around in the most expensive Armani suits all the time. That should show off clearly how much money he's spending on his clothes. So that's, there's a balance of that as well. Fine. So we were in Mitzvah Reish Nun Ches 258, not to cheat with weights and measures. We're at the part where it says Midine HaMitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah. Masha Amru, that which the sages said, Shehamodeid O Hashokel V'Avil, that if you measure or weigh perversely, Afal Pishu Goneid B'li Sofek, this is in a certain sense part of the prohibition of stealing. It's a facet of it that is has its own specific details that it merited to have its own mitzvah in the Torah. Eino mishalem tashlumei kefel el mishalem lo mashachasar min hamido hamishkal. So we have a din by gneva when you go steal something, without not brazenly, but you go burgle someone. So when you pay back, you have to pay back tashlumei kefel. You have to pay double, not just the amount that you stole, but double. So here that's not the case. So even here, if you do it in a sneaky way and the person doesn't realize he's being cheated, then you don't have to pay tashlumei kefel, because it's, even though it's a sort of gnevedik, it's a type of thievery to cheat with weights and measures, since as a separate mitzvah in the Torah, that you do it specifically in this manner, so you don't pay back double. V'chein masha amr zichronon livracha, that which the sages say, l'mishmeres mitzvah zo, in order to protect this mitzvah, shesela shenifke mamin hatzad, lo yasena mishkal. So let's say you have a coin called a sela, and it got chipped on the side. Mm-hmm. So when it's chipped on the side, it's not readily noticeable. So in the olden days, I guess nowadays also, mm-hmm. coins had a specific weight in addition to a specific monetary value. So if the coin's chipped a little, does it affect the coin's monetary value? No, it doesn't affect the coin's monetary value, but it does affect the weight. So therefore, if it's chipped on the side, so it's not going to be easily noticed that if this coin cannot serve as a standard weight anymore, so therefore you can't use it.
That's before they milled the sides. you look at a coin.
Yeah, nowadays, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the olden days, coins weren't perfectly round either. They were just a piece of metal that they stamped with a thing. Shema yipage mimena yoser via mishkal chaser. So if it's on the side, so it can be more easily chip more, and it won't have the proper weight. You shouldn't even keep it around in a place where people might not notice the chip and use it as a weight. But if a chip weighs so much, it only weighs half as much as it used to weigh, then that's like half a standard weight, and then you could use it, because then it's easily recognizable. Person can, how do you make your weights and measures? So you can use, have a chatzi, a sa'a and a chatzi sa'a. Avalo yaseana kabayim, but you should make a measure of two kabayim. Why? So 1.5 kav is a quarter, is a quarter of a sa'a is a kav and a half. So if you do two kavs, then that's too close to a rova sa'a, to a quarter of a sa'a, which is a more standard measure. So if, since they're too close, then you would, you shouldn't make such a weight, since the normal standard measure is a rova sa'a, as opposed to a kabayim. V'chein v'midos halach, the same applies to measures of volume of liquids. Osehin v'chatzihin, you can make a hin v'chatzihin, kedis v'abrais v'abasra, it talks about these all these weights. So we obviously don't use these exact weights anymore, the same principle applies. You shouldn't make a weight that's unusual, that's close to a standard weight, that people might get confused between that and the standard weight or measure. So we're talking about a different thing now. We're talking about surveying land. Bechevel, so if you use a type of cord or measuring tape nowadays to measure land, lo yamud le'echad bimos hachamov le'echad bimos hagshamim. So you shouldn't use the same measure one time in winter and one time in summer. Mipnei shehachevel miskatzer bimos hachamov. So apparently when the sun's out in the summer, so the measuring tape gets a little shorter, dries out, maybe.
You need a ruler.
Umasha Amru, right, but you can't measure land, because it has to be...
Right.
Umasha Amru, shetzarech kol adam ledakdek harbe b'mashichas harkarka, that you have to be very careful about measuring land, the fishesh chilukin harbe b'mashichas harkarka bein ahar v'hagai, that there's a great difference between measuring a mountain and a valley. V'ishayin bo gamkein bein haigulin b'haribuin b'halachsonin. Sometimes, because land is not straight. You don't have like a liquid measure or a ruler that you can use for straight things or things that can just fill the measure. So the land has a lot of bumps and jagged edges to it. So you have to be extremely careful about measuring it. The Gemara even says that when you're measuring land, and you're talking, maybe there's a tiny parcel of land in the corner that you're not so careful about. You have to look at each tiny piece of land as if it's filled with saffron. So if each piece of land is if it's filled with saffron, so then you're not going to say, it's just a tiny bit of land. I'm not going to be so careful with my measurement. So that you have to not relax about any tiny detail. The od harbe in yonin hamizbarim besifrei chochmas acheshbon v'hagimatrios. Gematrios is not what we're talking about, taking Hebrew words and finding the numerical value and then finding other phrases that correspond to that numerical value, making cute little divrei Torah that are being used loosely about these things. Yeah. But it's talking about...
geometry.
Well, yeah, it's talking about geometry, it's talking about arithmetic. Well, the cheshbon is, I guess, more arithmetic, and gematria is more geometry. Shechalku bein zovis nitzova lezovis nirvachas vezovis chada. I bet you didn't know all the Hebrew words for these things, which are beilu shalosh shurasein keseder. One is a right angle. Mrs. Hirsch, correct? Oh, you don't have the picture?
Yeah, they have a picture here. Well, here's
the picture. Oh, yeah. Oh, I turned the page. Oh,
I have the picture. Yeah. One is a right angle. All of high school geometry is now flashing before my eyes. One is a right angle, one is an obtuse angle, and one is an acute angle. If you look at the Hebrew, zavis nitzava. No, it's in the Sefer Chinuch itself. Here. So one is, again, so zavis nitzava, a standing corner, which is standing, perpendicular. One is a zavis nirvachas, a wide, loose corner with an obtuse angle. And zavis chada, a sharp corner, is an acute angle. Uvein mishulash, so you need to know all the dinim in halacha and the geometry for all these types of angles in order to measure properly. Uvein mishulash shave hatzlaos, what's the mishulash shave hatzlaos in English? An equilateral triangle. A triangle where all the sides are the same. Ba'mishulash asher shtei hatzlaos bilvad shavos, where two of the sides alone are equal, what's that called in English? An isosceles triangle. The Hu, we're reviewing ninth grade right now. Mm-hmm. The Hu Nikra Mishulash Shove Hashokayim. That's not talking about where all three sides of all the sides are the same, but it says the two legs are the same. Two legs of the triangle are the same as opposed to the bottom. Uvein Mishulash She'ein Sela Mikol Tzalos of Shavos. When there's a triangle where none of the three sides are the same length, the Hu Hanikra Mischalif Hatzlos. That is talking about all different types of measurements to the sides. What's that called in English? A scaling triangle. The only one I... Uvein meruba ravua shave le meruba aruch. So a meruba ravua, what's a meruba ravua? A square. and meruba aruch, a long square, literally. There's no word in Hebrew for rectangle per se, so you either have to say a square or a long square.
Long square, but these are, what do you call them, parallelograms. They're not,
these are still squares.
In the picture, in this footnote.
A square or a long square.
Right, so you have, how's your picture? My picture's a little different. Oh, your picture's a little different from mine. Okay. Umaruba me'uyan kazeh. This is wrong. Here I just have a plain diamond, but that's just a square that's tilted on the side. Meruba me'uyan, you probably have the more correct.
They don't show regular squares.
Which is
just show the
parallelogram, and then what's that, a rhombus?
Rhombus.
Next one is a rhombus. Anyway, meruba dome le'umu'uyan kaze, and a meruba that's similar to a parallelogram, which is a, again, I think it's called a rhombus, Mrs. Hirsch, right? So he has the actual geometrical terms here. Okay, I didn't realize that. So he has, so it says isosceles scalenosator, and then it says an elongated, a balanced parallelogram, and then a rhomboid parallelogram. Okay, whatever it is. All these geometrical figures, so you have to know how to use them, see? So that's like what the Vilna Gaon said. The Vilna Gaon said that if you don't learn secular subjects, listen, tell all your Haredi relatives in Israel this, if you don't learn secular subjects, you'll be missing, more than you'll be missing out on secular subjects, you'll be missing out on Torah, because you don't know these basic, he doesn't say basic.
You measure the earth, the acres of the land that somebody stole.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So, the Vilna Gaon himself wrote a book on geometry. Some say so when he was in the bathroom. Whatever it is, so the Vilna Gaon did write a book in Hebrew, and he encouraged one of his students who knew Greek, I think, to translate some Euclid, Greek, I guess it was Euclid, to translate some Greek mathematical works into Hebrew so the Vilna Gaon could... Greek he didn't learn. That he didn't have time for. But geometry apparently he did have time for. But talk about basic geometry. You don't have to learn calculus in order to know the Torah properly. That's why,
I wish I knew it.
Really? So I had this argument, my mother especially is also, I'm not a math person. My mother is also not a math person. My father is more scientific, but I'm not pure math. So one time I was in high school, I said, why do I need to learn this? I know what I want to do in life already. It does not involve any of these maths. It's just a waste of time. Why should I learn it? My mother says, no, you have to learn it. It's important, for life, whatever. So I said, Mother, when was the last time you used any math beyond basic arithmetic since high school? She says, never.
Not even algebra?
There you go. From my point. Algebra? Anyway, whatever. Some people like math, so that's their thing. So maybe Betsy DeVos will reform the school system, and she'll figure out that people need to be trained based on their natural inclinations as opposed to forced into the mold of the system. So whatever she is, whether you like her or not.
But I'd like to tell you.
Whether you like her or not, but the educational system needs to be changed, shake it up.
Disagreement about that.
Fine.
Brains need to be...
right, okay. V'chamat studin v'chayotze be'elu, these types of things. Lo yachil klav gadol aro vatsuro she'asu b'zeh ba'alei chochmas ha'tashbores v'ashura nikroin al handasa be'inyanim eile. So if a gigantic klav will not be able to record all these figures and calculations that the mathematical scholars have come up. So he quotes the Arabic word for geometry, which is al handasa. So handasa in modern Hebrew means engineering. In classical medieval Hebrew, where they copy and they borrow the term from Arabic, so handasa means geometry and does not mean engineering. But in modern Hebrew, it means engineering. So basically the point is, we just have to be very careful when measuring land to use the proper mathematical calculations. So the rules that Chazal said regarding the calculations, so anything that is a square cubit, amtra utre chumshe balachsona. So there's a square cubit, so the diagonal is going to be an amma, a cubit, and 2/5. So what's that?
Pythagorean theorem.
Oh, exactly. That's the Pythagorean theorem. So is that true? So wait, what's 1 squared plus 1 squared is 2. So what's 1 squared? I have to get the calculator here. So what's 1 and 2/5 is 1.4 squared. It's 1.96. So according to the strict Pythagorean theorem, if you have a cubit and a cubit, so the hypotenuse of the triangle or the diagonal of the square should be 1 plus 1 is 2, c squared equals, wait, 1 squared plus 1 squared is 2 equals, and so the square root of that is square root of 2.
Yeah, just so the square root of 2.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so it has to be the square root.
4.
Yeah,
1.4.
It's a, right, it's a,
Right, so that seems too off. Anyway, whatever, well, he's going to discuss it. And if there's a circle that has on the circle, circumference, of course, the circumference of 3 handbreadths is going to have a diameter of a 1 handbreadth.
Whoops.
So according,
they rounded pi down to the nearest integer. Yeah.
So the Torah says pi is 3. Don't give me all your 3.14159265, whatever. Anyway, no, that's not true. Obviously, v'chein kama meruba yeser al ha'igul. So what's the area of a square greater than the area of an inscribed circle? Revia, a quarter, which is also not exactly accurate. The chayotze b'kolim elu, all these types of things. Shalom amru zichron levracha al hakivun agamor kiim bekiruv. Ah, this is very important. The Chazal, when they're giving you mathematical formulas, so they're not giving you the exact. I mean, Hebrew doesn't, in the ancient Hebrew especially, didn't have all the vocabulary to describe all of these irrational numbers. So they give you the they can make it more accurate than what they did, the 3, but to give it with the exact accuracy that we have nowadays, it wasn't necessarily in their purview. But they didn't even care about giving the exact, they're giving approximations. What do you need to know the exact value of pi for? How does that help you in life at all? V'lachein, al tismoch b'zeh b'chalukas hadvarim bein b'nei adam. So this is only going approximately, but you cannot rely on Chazal's figures when you're talking about the allotting property to different people based on math, like measuring. So you have to go with what the mathematical scholars say and not these figures that Chazal tell you, which are openly simply approximations. V'al tisma, don't be shocked. Eichichtevu davar bilti, so a lot of people are shocked. How could Chazal tell you something that's not exactly in accordance with mathematical truth? Eichichtevu davar bilti mechuvan v'hemanshe emes asher lukim nitzah ba'adosam. The Chazal were people of great truth, absolute truth, that the God was standing within them, so to speak. So if Chazal use math, they don't need it. They're not describing these mathematical formulas for interpersonal things, for dividing properly. They're talking about mitzvos bein adam lamakom. They're talking about ritual things. So for measuring the Tchum Shabbos, which is 2,000 amos outside the city, or the distance required, which we discussed a few mitzvos ago, between kilayim, between planting different crops in the same field. Since we're going with approximations anyway, so that means we're going to err on the side of stringency. It doesn't hurt anyone in terms of financial dealings with others. In each place they gave a figure that was appropriate for that rule. So this is a famous statement that where they weren't exactly careful, but they erred on the side of stringency, which is always what you're supposed to do with ritual things. That all these things, all these exact measurements, you're not going to build a sukkah that's the exact minimum height to the millimeter that people translating the cubits go based on whatever it is, their opinion it is in meters. You're not going to go based on the exact. Nothing in halacha is so exact. You want to make sure that it gives more. The same thing too for kiddush, even though we have a measurement for what the revius is. You're not going to use a becher that's the tiniest size of the revius, because why would you do that? It's unnecessary, especially for people who like wine. So you have a little more wine at the meal. It's no big deal. But if you never rely on things to the last minute. We're discussing also last night zmanim. That zmanim, these calculations that are printed in all the calendars and on the website. So the zmanim are really astronomical phenomena. Since we don't go outside and observe astronomical phenomena much anymore, so we have approximations of them. We don't rely on the last minute. You don't look on your watch and the exact second that the clock strikes that the Shabbos is over, according to the zman that we give on the calendar, you don't immediately go light a match. I'm not saying you can't if there's something emergency came up or whatever, but that's not the derech. That's not proper that you go and mamish the last minute.
Usually, but the time it's given though already
is already a chumran hachinami.
Right?
And
also, again, the approximations that Chazal had for say what the value of pi is and so on are rather insignificant compared to the approximations regarding how big is an amma or a tefach and all the other The measurements themselves are very...
Well, there was more standardization in the olden days in terms of an amma. People didn't literally just go measuring their forearms and using it as an amma.
Like
there
was the king's forearm or something?
No, there was a standard measurement. Like nowadays, we have a measurement called a foot. It doesn't correspond necessarily to the average size of a foot. It just was once based on something resembling a foot, so therefore we call it a foot. Anyway... You're right, so in a certain sense, some of the zmanim already, chumra is built into them, but even so, you wouldn't want to, again, who knows if the clock is so accurate, and whatever it is, you wouldn't rely on them down to the very, very last second. You always want to give a little bit of breathing room on any side of chumra. So we shouldn't necessarily ascribe exact detail to Chazal in all these places. Yes, they brought the mitzvah, the basra of the mekomos echerim. It's found mostly in Bava Basra, but in other places as well. But I guess b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zucharim munikevos. It's a negative commandment, so it applies across the board. V'over alav a shiker b'midah b'mishkol v'mesura over alav. And if you lied about your weights and measurements, so you violate a negative commandment. Aval ein lokin alav, you don't receive the penalty of lashes. L'fishu nitan l'tashlumin, because you can fix it. So fixable negative commandments do not receive the penalty of lashes because you simply give back what you stole, and you can fix, in theory, what you did wrong. The chas of a Rambam, zichrono lebracha, sheim shiker b'midos, afilu legoy oved avoda zara over belosasa v'chayiv lahachzer. That this mitzvah applies not only between Jews, but between Jews, and not only non-Jews who are good non-Jews in our opinion, but it applies to non-Jews who absolutely worship Avodah Zarah, which even non-Jews are certainly usher to do. Nevertheless, you are not allowed to cheat them with weights and measures. V'chein usher lahatos hagoyim b'cheshbon. So the same thing too, if you are ringing them up at your store, and you have a Hindu come in, and he's buying a stack of 5 packages of cream cheese. So you ring 1, 2, 3, 4. Whoops! You do twice. You ring one up twice. So that's not allowed.
That's not this particular mitzvah, though.
Right.
That's just regular cheating.
Right. That's regular cheating. Right. That's not this particular mitzvah. If you have a scale and you have a button, on the scale.
But the butcher has his thumb on the scale. Would that actually qualify for this?
It's not sure, absolutely.
Sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Same idea. Yeah. If you press down on the scale, you're weighing the meat for an Ovid Avodah Zarah, or whatever it is, and then it's absolutely not allowed. Shenemar v'chishavim konehu, that one calculates with the purchaser, afal pi shehu kavush tachas yodecha. We're talking about here a ger toshav. It's talking about a non-Jew who lives in Eretz Yisrael, and he's under Jewish control. So it's like even a non-Jew under control, our control and total authority, we're not allowed to cheat. So kal v'chomer l'goy she'enu kavush tachas yodecha. So at the time, a regular non-Jew in America, so how we can't cheat them, obviously. They have no shaychis to us being in control of them at all. V'harehu omer, cannot. V'harehu omer, ki so'avas Hashem kolos avel mikol makom. It also says in the pasuk that an abomination of God is anyone who does a perversion, talking about between, in these types of things, business things, mikol makom. Anyone who does it has nothing to do with who the target is. It's talking about only that the person does it, and it's still usur midoraisa. This is as distinct from what the principle that we call, colloquially, toz nachri. So toz nachri means that if a non-Jew makes a mistake of their own accord, not you trying to cheat them, then you're not required, according to strict halacha, to correct the non-Jew's misconception. So if
can
you
we go ahead and lift a mishur if it didn't
absolutely you can. Please, it's recommended that it's you make a kiddush Hashem and you you inform the non-Jew of this mistake. But according to most opinions, like we formulated here, this only applies if the non-Jew makes a mistake completely of their own accord and did not have any help from you.
And also that it would not be, make a chol Hashem.
Right. Oh, if it's gonna, if the person is for sure gonna discover it, it would make a chil Hashem. Then of course it's usher.
It was a Jew who did not.
Right. That's of course that's for sure usher. But talking about, but even a place where they're never gonna find out, so it's still a mitzvah to do a kiddush Hashem and to return the law, to return the money.
It's not good for you, Hashem.
Okay. Mitzvah reishon and tes, which is the mitzvah saseh that is the corollary to the one we just discussed. Mitzvah tzidok ha-moznayim v'ha-mishkolos v'ha-mishkolim v'ha-midos. That to accuratify, what's a good English word for that? To make, there's no tzidok in this concept. I want one word. I want one word. I want one word.
Oh, well, okay.
Rectify.
Rectify means there's something wrong with it already.
Okay, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway. If this were German, I'm sure I could concoct a compound, but English is not quite so malleable. So you have to make good the moznayim, the scales, and the weights, and the measures in general. Litzadek ha-moznayim, ha-mishkalim, ha-midos, u'liyasheros, and li-shamer me'od, ba-ha-bam. So you have to maintain accuracy of the scales and the weights and the measures, and to make them honest, not that they can be dishonest in and of themselves, but to make them serve you in the purpose of honesty, and to be very careful about them. Shenemar, Mosnei Tzedek, Avnei Tzedek, Eifas Tzedek, Vein Tzedek Yalachem, all these types of weights and measures and scales have to be of righteousness, of accuracy. Belozhen Sifri, the Lachi Medrash says, Mosnei Tzedek, what does it mean, the scales of justice, tzadekes hamoznayim yafe yafe. So make sure the scales are very, very accurate. Kilomar shetiena hamoznayim yusharos. They have to be straight. In other words, if one part of the scale, I mean, nowadays we have electronic scales in stores for the most part, but in the olden days when you had analog scales, then we had to start at the same place. If one was started lower than the other, then... Right, it wouldn't work.
Is there a certain shear involved? How much it can be off before you're over? In this,
I mean, really, it's not supposed to be anything.
1 in 1,000, 1 in 100, and what is it?
So we have a normal principle in halacha that when you talk about when you overcharge, so it's only if you overcharge by a sixth that most people are makbid on it. So maybe nowadays people are makbid on less. Mm-hmm. That's the classic. Again, the mitzvah is to make it as totally accurate as possible, but. Again, in terms of restitution, maybe, if it's less than a six, and that's the people are makbid on such a thing, they don't have to do it. Kilomar, shetiena moznayim yushar. It's fine. V'yesh be'inyan moznayim kivunim gidolim v'yishev shel asos b'hem kama minei shkarim. You can make a lot of problems with scales. Yodu adavar. It's known how you could unscrew a part here, you could, make one hand of the scale longer than the other. Avni tzedek, tzedekes hamishkalos yafe yafe. Same thing with the weights that you use on the scale. Gam hamishkalos, gam ken efshal asos bem harbe mine sheker. Kein ma'ashom ezichon al-brocha, ani asid li par misha tome mishkalos sova melech. You can make a lot of inaccuracies with the weights. So it's good. And Maseches Bava Metzia quotes God as saying, I will seek restitution myself. In other words, I'm going to give it to somebody who stores their weights in salt. that if you store your weight when they're not being used, you know, the container that you store them in contains salt, that will corrode it, and it'll make them weigh less. Eifas tzedek, tzedek es ha'eifos yafe yafe, v'in tzedek tzedek es ha'hinen yafe, v'eifa midas ha'yavish, v'hin midas lach. So these are both measurements of volume, and eifa is for dry goods, and hin is a measurement of liquids. V'zirasnu ha'tara b'chol echad, v'echad midivarim eilu, b'frat, l'chomer ha'inyan. So it's, it pointed out each one of these things independently in order to emphasize how severe, how serious this prohibition is. The Afabisha kol nichlal b'chlal lo sonu isha samiso. It's all included in the verse that says you shouldn't cause distress to your fellow. And the Mefarshim point out that probably he meant to quote a different pasuk. Probably meant to quote the pasuk that said al tonu ishes ochiv. That's talking about cheating people and causing distress in business. Whereas this pasuk is really talking about what's called onas dvarim, which is the prohibition of saying something hurtful to another person. So in any event, but it's not, onah is a general concept. You're not allowed to cause distress either by words or by deeds. Beloshin sifro, al tenai kach otseisi eschem mi'eretz mitzrayim, shetekabal aleichem mitzvas mido. So not, that's, I only took you out of Egypt. So what does the pasuk say? Moses said, ani Hashem elokeichem asher otseisi eschem. I think the pasuk says that it connects right there, this mitzvah to Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it was on this condition that God took us out of Egypt. In other words, it's as if when we violate this mitzvah, it's as if God's saying, okay, I regret it.
We have to go back.
Back to Egypt with you. I mean, we're not going back to Egypt, obviously, but
something analogous will happen.
Okay. But, in other words, it's a violation. I mean, every avera is really a violation of our covenant with God to a certain extent. But this is really breaking the deal. I'm taking you out of Egypt if you keep this mitzvah about making sure all your weights and measures are proper, and you have to keep your side of the deal. They say also that if you violate this mitzvah, it's as if you are kofar, as if you deny the whole concept of Yetzias Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt, of the Exodus. Amru gamkein zichronam livracha. So if you're a matzah seller and your scale is wrong and you sell your matzah isn't actually a pound in the box, that's no good. Dafka on Pesach,
it can be broken up, but right? That's
right. As long as it's the correct weight. If he guarantees that all the pieces are not going to be broken,
oh my gosh.
If he guarantees that all the pieces are not going to be broken, so
that's hard.
I think in the inside of shatz or matzah, I haven't had that in a very long time, but. In the end, in the packet, it says, we pack only whole matzos, but if in case there's just a little bit of weight to be made up, so we may put in one piece or something like that.
Yeah.
But some people, some matzo companies don't pack only whole ones. And some matzo companies have better packaging than others. Mm-hmm. They're more going to get to you whole. Yeah, these matzos nowadays have to be shipped over long distances is a big problem. We shall just go to the matzah bakery and find the matzahs we want, take them home, take the box lovingly in the car, and be done.
Melts around it.
Maybe we should bake matzahs at home.
Okay. Was it you or was it somebody?
I think Rabbi Schwartz gave it.
Had a whole practice, almost a diet.
I mean,
against somebody who wanted to make it.
Right.
Home. Who did it?
Who did it? Exactly.
But.
In the Heights.
I mean, in theory, it's obviously possible, and they all, in, you know, 1,000 years ago, they used to do it. In Yemen, they used to bake matzahs at home, before they came to Israel. They used to bake, that was the part of the women's job. I think we were talking about this recently. Part of the women's job was to bake fresh bread every day. So on Pesach, she had to bake fresh bread every day also, so she had to know all the halachos of how to bake matzah. Yep.
We get perhaps overly reliant on professionals. To do things.
Yeah, I mean, it's also hard because, to be perfectly honest with you, so modern-day ovens are not suited to baking matzah because contemporary ovens bake by filling the oven with hot air, and then the bread bakes by sitting in the hot air on a cold tray. Whereas in the olden days, and this is the way they used to do it in Yemen 75 years ago as well, and in all Jewish homes 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, whatever, is they had an oven that you bake the bread by placing it on the surface of the oven.
Like a pizza oven, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Like a pizza oven.
Which exactly. Also, by the way, is like 800, 900 degrees.
Yeah, and you can't get
there that. Are people, in fact, who, you know, make their own homemade pizzas by defeating the you know, the interlock,
which lets them self clean.
Put the self clean. It's like, hey, self cleaning temperature for baking. This is a good way to burn down an apartment building, I think. You know,
really?
You know.
With your neighbors in it. It's not just a private
I mean, there's no din that the oven has to be quite so hot to bake matzah, but it's the big problem with baking matzah at home nowadays, if you want to use modern baking, is that even if you set the oven to 500 degrees, 600 degrees, which...
500 degrees.
You have to put a stone in there or something like that.
You right, so then like if you take the oven on a cold tray, you take the matzah and you put it in, so the matzah doesn't start baking right away, because the thing is cold. The point is that matzah should start baking right away in order not to become chametz. As soon as it touches the surface of the oven, it should start baking right away, which is part of the problem, as we discussed last year, with contemporary machine matzahs. That contemporary machine matzahs are baked, many of them are baked in an oven where it does not have this, where it's on a cold conveyor belt, or not as hot as the oven, and then it goes into the oven, which is the air in the oven is heated to a certain temperature, and then it comes out at the end after a very long time in the oven, because it takes much longer to bake. A hand matzah takes a few seconds to bake, because it comes into contact immediately with a hot oven. So that's why some people have issues with the way machine matzahs are made nowadays, not the way they were made, some people had a problem with the whole concept of machine matzahs, but even if you accept the concept of machine matzahs, so the way they bake nowadays does create some sort of problem. Some of them are in the oven for several minutes, and that's why they come out...
But it's still less than 18.
18 minutes does not apply when the dough is heated. The 18 minutes applies...
Start to finish.
Right. The 18 minutes applies... If the dough is heated, then it could be chametz in less than 18 minutes. And certainly if it's at a sort of oven temperature, but it's not actually being baked at the time,
in other words, then it creates major problems. Is not, if it is like warm... But not hot enough to start baking.
What is
we have to go based on the tradition that we have, based on how to bake matzah. So the problem, basically, the problem with these newfangled machines for baking matzah is, like you said, we don't know exactly what's considered chametz and what's considered matzah in terms of scientific criteria. So you have to go based on something that fits in with the tradition that we have of how to bake matzahs.
Are you saying machine stuff today is different than it was? X number of years
ago. Absolutely.
How many?
The way machine matzahs were baked 75 years ago, I mean, I don't know how they did in the Manischewitz factory in Cincinnati, I have to look into that more, but the way they were baked in Europe, certainly, was the machine only did the kneading and the mixing of the flour and the water, and it was rolled into a flat loaf by the machine, and then they were put in the oven by hand. The baking procedure was exactly the same as for hand matzahs. The machine only did the problem is when you automate everything and you have the matzah going into this type of oven, which is not the type of oven that is traditionally used for baking matzahs, so you have departures from the Misora and the tradition, you never know what's going to happen. That's why the brisker of, but most people know that the opposition to machine matzahs was from the Chassidim. Chassidim said, no, we're nothing new. We don't do anything new. We're going to take away the parnasa from the almanas who are baking the hand matzah. If we introduce machines, automation is taking away jobs. So therefore, and they said we don't do anything new when it comes to mitzvahs. So we reject the whole concept of machine matzahs. But some rabbis said, well, you can see this is better. You know, it needs the dough faster and it a more consistent product. So the machine matzah is better. But that's when they were baking it in the ovens that were very analogous to the hand matzah oven.
And Breuer's has...
About it. I saw videos online. If you look at the Manischewitz factory, the machine matzahs are in the oven for several minutes. Why should it take that long to bake a tiny... And it comes out with the consistency of a cracker, a completely different consistency from the hand matzah. Seems to be, I don't know.
Rabbi
Yonason Steif's machine matzahs were, like I said, okay. Rabbi Yonason Steif,
here in the United States.
Yes, here in the United States. They rolled out the dough with the machine and they baked them by hand. Yeah, Rabbi Yonason Steif's machine matzahs were very good. Very, very good. I mean, there are some factories in Israel that have that have been alerted this. It hasn't become such widespread knowledge, but there are some factories in Israel that have a machine that have the oven for baking machine matzahs at the same temperature approximately as the for baking hand matzahs. So a few of them. I mean, it's a problem hashgaphically. Because I mean, we're way off topic right now. But no, hashgaphically, like I said, the Brisker Rav said we don't know scientifically exactly what's chametz and matzah, so you have to go. You don't change things from based on traditionally how it was done, how it was made. So that's why the Brisker Rav only ate hand matzahs. I mean, and but the Aruch Lener, famously, of Yaakov Ettlinger, had the opposite svara. He said, we see with our eyes that this is better for baking matzah, so we accept technological innovations. But again, of course, his matzah were placed in the oven by hand, so they didn't have this problem at all. But you see, when you change things, sometimes you don't realize that pitfalls can come from it, as opposed to just making things better. Anyway, so I'm among misnagdim. I'm alone in my voice of I'm very pro hand matzah for this reason. But anyway, a lot of misnagdim specifically want machine matzah because they feel like it's a machine can do it more efficiently than a person can, which may be true. Besides, for this oven issue,
so you're fine, just doing it for the sake of heaven.
Shorish mitzvah sayoshev achakas agezel v'tarmes v'bein b'nei adam. How do we get on that? Mitzvah sayoshev achakas agezel v'tarmes v'bein b'nei adam yadua l'chol ben das. So this is obvious to anyone, the why in society we need honesty in business. Midinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Mashamir zichron levracha, she'inos l'mishkolos shel bedil v'oferes v'chol shar minei matchos. So you don't make weights out of tin and out of lead, in order so that they shouldn't rust and corrode. Levi shemal and chaluda mischasrin, that when they rust,
lead doesn't rust.
Sefer Chinuch says lead rusts.
You can't change that.
They can corrode somehow.
It's soft, so it can.
Right,
you know, you
right,
can,
right.
It can
well, here it says malin chaluda. Here it says whatever it is. You don't make metal weights, apparently. So what's the official kilogram in France? What's that made of?
It's made actually of a some special, you know, platinum iridium alloy or something like that, which is, you know, whatever. There's a.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe that's the official meter, I think, something like that. You know.
Uh-huh.
Right. There's a
now actually no. It's back now. It's defined in terms of so many wavelengths of a certain laser. You know.
Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So you know.
Right, but there is a meter stick, and then there's a kilogram.
There is, I know, but that's superseded, actually. Now it's actually defined in terms of, you know, light frequency. Yes, because that is, you know, obviously
length.
Yeah, you know, length. But from the length comes the other thing, because after all, a milliliter, you know, is a gram of water at 4 degrees centigrade, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Aval osin osan shel even uzchuches v'chayotze ben. You can make them of stone and of glass and things like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could include, nowadays we have certain types of metals that don't rust and they don't corrode, like stainless steel. So it could be nowadays you could make your weights of stainless steel. But who has weights nowadays? Now we have digital scales. Dvarim she'amru b'medidas hakarka. So that which we talk about measuring the land. U'mashe limdunu b'tzuras ha'mechak she'korin b'la'az rasura. So when you talk about when you have a volume measurement and you fill it with, say, flour, something like that, so in order to, you have to smooth off the top in order that it shouldn't be too high, and then you're giving too much. You don't have to cheat yourself either. The salesman doesn't have to cheat himself, but you have to, there are certain rules about what you can use to smooth off the top. So, for example, you can't use a gourd because it's like a squash. Because that's too light. So if you just, you know, move it across, it'll be too light and it'll maintain a little heap. And you can't use a metal because then that's too heavy and you're gonna press too much and it's gonna knock too much off.
It down and pressing it
well, technically, it would go according to Minag HaMedina, whatever's accepted in the business practices of the town. But these are the classic rules that are given by Chazal. You're supposed to use a certain type of wood that's considered to be not too heavy and not too light, the Goldilocks type of wood.
The question is,
wouldn't
if you had a, you know, a store keeper like that, wouldn't it be better to actually use a regular weights, you know, with a balanced scale, so you can mekayim this mitzvah instead of an electronic scale?
Why? You can be mekayim an electronic scale. You have to make sure that it's accurate. That's all.
Oh, I mean, okay. In other words, so the weights and measures.
The hiring your technician to come tune up your scale at regular intervals, suspected of being. Of already getting off, getting off.
So the actual weight, physical weights are just an example.
Nowadays, sure.
Okay, got it.
Sure. It also says you shouldn't you should do one slow pass over the top. You shouldn't do it little by little, because then whatever, there are all these rules about it, which again, if nobody in the whole area is makbid on it, that there's no accepted business practice, so that generally supersedes all the official rules as recorded in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. The Amru Gamkin Shali Artiach Midas Halach Be'ish Shemodid. So some storekeepers, when they were measuring liquids, they used to boil them, so that while they were in the container, they would be boiling, and they would look higher than they really are in the container. So you're not allowed to do that. Afilu haisa midak tana
biyoser. Once you take it off the flame, it's going to settle down.
Yeah, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. So even if it's in the tiniest type of volume measurement, shrei matzinu shatorek pidal midas b'chol shehu, shenemar b'torah lo sasu avil b'mishpat, b'midah b'mishkal v'mesura. So it uses the example of a mesura. A mesura is a very tiny measurement of volume, as we pointed out last time. A mesura midak tana b'yoser shu chelek echad mishlosha shloshim b'lug. 1/33 of a lug. What was the calculation that we gave? So if a lug, it's about 10.
Half an ounce.
Yeah. Right, okay. Right, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's a very small amount, so even that you're not allowed to boil it. That's talking about the different lengths of the branches of the scale when you're measuring different things, which again we don't really use nowadays. And also any types of strings that are used to measure things. And the scales, different types of scales that it could be apparently are more accurate, depending on the type of thing they're weighing. I don't know exactly Matthias of scales back then. So you don't rely on everybody to fulfill this mitzvah by themselves. You send around policemen, send around officers to check the weights and measures in all the different stores to make sure that they're accurate. So the same thing here. So the government, the Jewish community doesn't do this independently either, so rely on the government, their inspectors who come to the businesses and they check the scales to make sure that everything is in working order. V'yesh lahem rishus liknos v'mamono gam begufo kol shnimtza imo mishka choser. So in the Jewish way, that if somebody, they not only do they get fined, but you could even lash them. The store owner is found to have improper measures, even though it's not officially malchus. So we have a principle that a bezdin can administer a punishment that's not in strict accordance with the halacha in order for what they view to be necessary to make sure society remains upstanding. It's all found in the fifth perek of Maseches Bava Basra. And the Minchas Chinuch points out there's another facet to this mitzvah that the Sefer Chinuch did not mention explicitly, which is that hin tzedek yelachem. One of the examples in the Torah is that you should have a hin, which is, we pointed out, a liquid volume measurement. But hin was, by Chazal, one example of one of their drushes, where Chazal interpret the Torah as if the Torah were speaking in Mishneic Hebrew, in the Hebrew that was spoken in the times of Chazal, as opposed to in Biblical Hebrew. So what was the word for yes in Biblical Hebrew? Go tell your teachers this, they'll be impressed. So there is no word for yes in Biblical Hebrew. The way you say yes is you repeat the verb.
Oh.
So in Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov Avinu asked, he was probably translated from the Aramaic, they were speaking at the time, but he says, Haidatem es Lavan ben Nachor, do you know Lavan, son of Nachor? And the answer is,
I know.
Yadanu. We know him. We know him. There is no word for yes. But what's the word for yes in Mishneic Hebrew? Hin.
Oh.
Which is nowadays, when we read Mishneic Hebrew, we pronounce it as hen, which is more of in accordance with the modern Hebrew word, which is ken, which is basically hin was borrowed. In the times of the Mishnah, is actually pronounced hin. Whereas hein is more biblical Hebrew, which we're more used to the nekudos of biblical Hebrew, so we pronounce it nowadays when we read Mishnah as hen. But in the times of the Mishnah, like I said, it was pronounced hin, derived from Aramaic, which means thus. So the same way, ken in Hebrew really means thus. So the way we have yes nowadays is, answer in modern Hebrew, the yes is ken, and we're saying thus it is, just as you said. That's basically how we use the word for ken. So when the Chazal interpreted hin tzedek, a yes of honesty, of justice. So the Chazal also derive from here the importance of speaking, proper speaking, and honesty in speech. That when you say yes and when you say no, it says hints. It says your hin shall be tzedek and your lav shall be tzedek. When you say yes and when you say no, you shouldn't take it lightly. You should really have intention to be that you're presenting yourself in an honest manner when you say yes and when you say no. All places and all times, males and females. You neglected to perform a positive commandment. They also have the lav of cheating and of stealing, depending on whether it's sneakily or not sneakily, if there is a shvei pruta. Though it's usher to steal, even less than a shvei pruta, the official mitzvah and the ways of restitution only officially kick in for gneva and gzela if you steal a pruta. So it's even worse in a sense if you cheat with your weights and measures, because when you steal from someone outright, you basically keep track of whom you're stealing from. So here, if you have tons of customers who come into your store, and sometimes you took out the correct measure, sometimes you took out the not correct measure, so you don't even remember to whom you have to pay restitution. That the punishment, the penalties for, even though in terms of earthly penalties, don't get lashes even or anything, you just have to make restitution, but it's so hard to do so that the punishment, the divine punishment for this is so much more because there's no way of making proper restitution.